This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Raisin Varner. He's the composer and senior sound designer for Borderlands 3. And really, it's just so awesome to have a chance to talk with you.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, you've been writing for Borderlands since the beginning, and you've also been the sound designer. And so right off the bat, I guess I'm really curious, because I can hear a difference in the music for Borderlands 3 from, you know, when it started with that kind of Wild West frontier vibe. And I mean, what to you is like the music arc from the beginning of the series to now?
Yeah, true to the previous games, I did all the music direction and a bunch of writing as well for the series, but I also did a lot of sound design, all the ratches, my work, a number of the creatures, the refresh on the skags. People can blame me for the puppy dying sound, because that was we've seen a couple of people bring that up, but that was actually a design request, and so, you know, we wanted people to feel a little guilty, so.
No action, and
we're always playing with people a little bit, you know, and so some people enjoyed that game. I think maybe some others didn't. But anyway, point being, I did a bunch of the UI sound design and a lot of boss sound design as well. And I also was doing the music implementation and the direction. And now I have been titled the music supervisor. So that's my current, I guess, title here. But Gearbox is an interesting place. It's a very like creative driven studio. So, you know, it's only recent because we're so large now. I think we're over 400 people if we include QA, that
wow.
Now titles are starting to mean something just because of how much distance there are between people. Because someone might be here for a year and now I don't see them. But when we started in Borderlands 1, there was like 75 people in the company. So we've grown a lot. But even so, even today, it's kind of like, you know, okay, sure, I'm music supervisor, but that doesn't mean I don't wear 10 other hats. And I wouldn't have it any other way, because, you know, I joke about the music system with Jesper a lot, and I say that the greatest strength of the system is that it's turned my composer ADD into a strength. Because we have to write so much material for it that, now I'll just, I can just spin that to being a positive now without actually changing myself.
Yeah, I for sure want to find out about that implementation system, because it sounds just nuts. And yet, you know, there's so much music that had to be put in the game. So I'm sure it helps to have the engine kind of do some of the work, right?
Yeah. So the music system we basically skipped a generation creating the music system. The system from BL2 to BL3 is, I don't even know if I use night and day. It's like, it's more like you travel to the moon. You know, so we have concept of sparse exploration, light combat, heavy combat. And so that's kind of the gradient that we have to cover for every single map in the game. So we'll have everything from like really sparse ambient musical tones and textures that just play occasionally to having fully arranged, real in-your-face combat music. So all the composers have to write from the really sparse to the really dense and really high energy cues. And we have a concept of sections. And so, you know, each section is essentially an intensity. And it's up to composers, where in some levels we had 5 sections. So we had 5 gradients of intensity. Others, most levels have 3. But anyways, we have a concept of a section. Within a section, we have parts. And those parts, there'll be several parts. Let's say like there's 5 parts in a section. Each part gets picked randomly, so there's no set order to them. Then within those parts, we have 7 layers of stereo stems, essentially. And each one of those layers has randomized options that can play. So you get this recombination happening at multiple levels in the score. So say you had a part one. Every time you play part one, it might pick 1 of 4 bass lines. It might pick 1 of 4 percussion parts. It might pick 1 of 3 chord changes. And it's all doing that on the fly. We also have a concept of interest, which is saying, as the interest gets high, we're going to allow more and more layers to play. But as the interest comes lower, we start to take those layers out as well. And there's other like filtering going on as well. And so there's just so much happening that it's very, very difficult for our composers to conceptualize the system fully while they're writing. And they have the express disadvantage of not being able to sit in front of the tools and making the tools. And that's one of my, that's the home field advantage that I have. So that's where the technical challenge lay for this incarnation.
Well, and then beyond the technical challenge, you've got like the artistic challenge, right? Because I can't even imagine where you would start when you know that all of this is going to happen, but you've got to create these stems that not only are going to play nicely with all of the other their layers, but you've got to make them musical too. So like, what is your process to make that all happen?
Yeah, because one of my early concerns is because the more interactive you get, actually, typically the more limiting the system becomes. And if you don't know which parts are going to play with which parts, it makes it very difficult to have interesting chord changes. And so oftentimes what happens is as the complexity of the system increases, the heart or the personality of the music can suffer. Because you get boxed into like, well, I can't do that because then I can't transition out of that, or this other thing could play and that could clash. And so it has this kind of homogenizing effect to what directions you're going to allow yourself to go once you start thinking about the system. And so one of the things we did to try to offset that is that we made the system very open-ended. So for example, I would tell the composers what the containers are we need to fill, but how they fill those containers is completely up to them. So if they want to write one part that's got like 75 different variations and we're just playing this one 8-bar thing that's just cycling so many parts that it sounds unique, they could do that. Or they could take a more linear approach and we could make a whole bunch of parts that essentially the song structure kind of, you know, mixes and matches and everything that way. And then we have other variations in there to play with. But it was really up to them how they wanted to kind of break things up and everything. And then I was there to assist them in, you know, would an idea work? If they needed to bounce an idea, what if I did this? Like, would this break? You know, so I was there to offer assistance in that respect as well. So, but you really did touch on exactly, that was like my greatest concern. And it's also probably one of the aspects I had the most pride in once we released the game, is that even with all that insane level of interactivity and complexity, like, we didn't lose any of the soul. Like, our personality still really shone through that. And so I'm really thrilled where we ended up, because it just feels like 2 years ago we set out to hit some goals and then we really hit them. And you usually have the opposite story in gaming. All of my expectations have been finally tuned to like, yep, that's going to fail. But yeah, but it really, really turned out wonderfully. It's nice. We did early test reviews, and our test reviews, like the audio and the music, was getting rated higher than the gameplay. We've never seen that. So,
wow.
So our audio department walked around here for a little bit, just going, oh yeah, yeah, look at this.
Well, with good reason, because, you know, I mean, one of the reasons why I do this series is because I don't think the music and the composers who write it get enough credit in games. And so, and you guys, you know, you work so hard and you put so much thought and really meticulous craft into creating it that, you know, it really should be showcased. And so that's really cool that it's gotten such great feedback, because as I've been playing through the game, it's astonishing. I mean, it all sounds fresh and new. I can't think of really a single moment where I think, I already heard this. So it's really, really cool. And yeah, let's talk about the other composers too, because Jesper is also on the team. He's also been with Borderlands since the very, very beginning. But then you were able to corral Michael McCann and the two Bryans of Finishing Move to help out too. So what was your pitch to them to bring them on board?
Man, I just, our composer team is so solid on this one. I'm thrilled at the level of talent. And I was also very intimidated by the level of talent we had. But I really enjoy those situations. Like, and it was great. We had a team that everyone felt like that. Everyone felt like everyone was stepping up to the plate, and everyone else had to step up too. And it was just such a perfect example of what like a really kind of positive competitive feedback loop really is, where the inspiration is equally driving some insecurity, but everyone's so capable that it just means that all their musical output is just that much better for it. None of us ever feel like we're competing against each other. We all just are more like, oh, I just gotta hold, you know, make sure my end holds up to the amazing piece that guy wrote. And to some degree, you can't really design that. It has to just kind of be emergent from the process and the relationships and the type of conversations you're having. And I think that something that really helps is that Borderlands is something where almost anything goes. So that's the thing. I picked people that, well, Jesper, you know, Jesper's the guy that I wouldn't do a Borderlands without. So there's just a personality to his writing and a uniqueness to it that it just it always really fits really well. And I was kind of excited for that, because I feel like when people get to Eden 6, like all of a sudden they get this burst of nostalgia from Jesper's sound, even though Jesper's music does not sound like the music he wrote for Borderlands 2.
Yeah.
And Borderlands 2 doesn't sound like the music he wrote for Borderlands 1. I mean, you can tell it's him, but mm-hmm. Borderlands is just never a game that we have one style and that's what our identity is and that's what we need to hit. In fact, one of the hardest parts I found of bringing new composers onto the series is actually getting them comfortable with the idea that we don't want them to sound like the previous game, that we don't want them to sound like another previous composer. One of the things I really, really value is our composers bringing their own voice to the music. So I'll feed them intent and, you know, I'll feed them narrative stuff. I'll talk about what my goals are. But it's really more just giving them information so that they can craft something that makes sense to themselves.
I think it's so cool that Jesper and Michael each have their own planet. It's like, you get a planet, you get a planet.
It's almost like everyone got their own album on this.
Yeah, series. Yeah, basically. So I would have thought that just that very concept would have given them a whole lot of freedom just right off the bat, too, and really, you know, artistic license to come up with something really unique that didn't have to fit with that whole universe.
Yeah, because it'd be like, you know, do you think this fits Borderlands? And you know, my infuriating answer is, well, do you think it is? You know, because I can tell them, you know, and I would often prompt, you know, McCann on stuff like that. But I'd say McCann is also someone that he fell right into it, like really quickly, right off the bat. Like one of the very first tracks that McCann wrote was for Athena's, and it was actually for a demo that we were doing internally. And we talked about it. We went through, you know, about three or four iterations of some concepts. And then when he started writing, it was just like he hit it. He just really hit it. He seemed to really understand it. And I felt that the piece he wrote that really highlighted his understanding of Borderlands the most is his theme to Sanctuary 3. ¶¶ that piece is just so cool to me, and it really highlights that there is a Borderlands sound, but there's not a Borderlands formula. You know, because if you listen to it, it'll feel like Borderlands. There's something about it feels very Borderlands, but it's not like, but you couldn't compare it to BL2 and be like, oh, it sounds like BL2. And that's something that, like, every Borderlands game is just its own thing. And I do have some stuff. There is style guide stuff. I'm not going to pretend that there isn't some structure there that helps guide everyone, because it's obviously not an accident that we have this kind of sympathetic personality between them all. But one of the things that I would say broadly would be, like, the use of ethnic instrumentation. We stay away from classical orchestrations. So you're never going to hear, like, a French horn section giving you a power melody. That doesn't happen ever in Borderlands. We do emphasize, oftentimes we emphasize timbre. So, for example, for, like, the desert, the reason we use acoustic guitars and everything is to kind of bring an element of back porchy, but it's really more about the timbre. It doesn't have to be an acoustic guitar. It could be a koto or something like that. And if they, essentially, if the composer has an idea like that, I do nothing but encourage them to go down those.
Yeah, well, what's so cool about it, it really makes the music fit so well with the environment too, because what I've always appreciated is that as you're roaming around, everything has been cobbled together from parts of other things that they've just found. They wire stuff together, and you've got pieces of, you know, huge sheet metal just leaning up against stuff. So the whole world has this sort of, you know, makeshift kind of quality. And so to have all these instruments is just such a great fit.
Yeah, yeah. You know, things like found percussion, using things like bowed and bent metal and working that into a texture, using dissonance. And if we do use orchestration, we do use orchestration, but if we do use orchestration, like, I usually direct them to be textural in their approach with it and not so much like part writing. And so that's all of that stuff. And what I like is that you can find ways in which composers break those rules all over the place. And that's intentional as well, because like I said, it's not so much being formulaic for me as it is we use the formula just to give ourselves some boundaries so that within those boundaries, we can make sense of the space and we can manipulate that musical space. But if we didn't have any boundaries, like, it makes that project a lot harder. And so the guidelines and the style guide is really, really loose. And it's basically just there to get people's conceptualizations kicked off in the right direction. But then if they want to take a sharp right turn, like, I can't think of one time I've ever said no to that.
Wow.
So, yeah, because it's like, oh, that's super weird. So that's the other thing, too, is that and that can be something that's difficult for composers to get accommodated to, because they're used to being requesting, essentially being directed to be somewhat safe with the music, because the game that they're working on, they have a very specific idea or a very film-based approach or something along those lines. And my approach for Borderlands is completely the opposite. It's like, that sounds really weird and it's probably risky, so let's definitely do that. And, you know, like, I believe we'll run pieces all the way through to completion the whole way. There was one cue that Jesper and I were like that on, and it was towards the end of Eden 6. And we're sitting there, and as he's writing, he's like, this is kind of insane. I don't know if it's going to work, but just something felt kind of interesting. So I went down that road, and he sends it to me, and I go, wow, you're right. That is super interesting. And I feel like it probably won't work, so let's make sure we finish this. And put it in the game, because we've learned after a decade of working together that sometimes we get surprised. Well, oftentimes we get surprised when it comes to Borderlands. And so both of us listening to the piece in isolation are like, oh, God, I don't know if it's going to work. And then we put it in the game and I go, oh, hey, it's perfect. let's not change anything there. This is working great, actually. And that happens like time and time and time again in this project. And so I've also learned to just step off that precipice and just let it be what it's going to be. And Borderlands doesn't really punish you when you do that. So that's why, like, I would say if I had to summarize our musical tradition in Borderlands, it'd be the eclecticism. Thank you.
actually, I'm really curious about that because I would love to know, you know, what it was about that particular cue that you thought wouldn't work. And then what was it about seeing it in the game where it actually turned out to be a good fit? Was it the visuals or what was going on with the gameplay? Or?
Yeah, it was a boss battle and we went really kind of gamey with it. And it really wasn't a standard narrative, you know, for a boss battle. It was kind of like, oh, okay, here we are, we're having some fun. And this is actually a major character that you're fighting and everything. And so it's like the story was setting this up to be more of like the sadness and other emotions going in there. And then we completely subverted expectations there by going more like very gamey with the music. And so the story that we were telling in the music was one of nostalgia and playing older games. And that's kind of what was the story. It had nothing to do with the story whatsoever. And so that was the concern. It was like, oh, okay, is this going to just feel like a clashy element? Is this going to feel like a shoehorn? But once we put it in, it just, the humor in the game and everything, it just all lined up. And it was like, oh, no, okay. No, this actually does feel like we're giving you some really fun music with this sort of nod at nostalgia for older gaming. And it like totally works because it ended up resonating with the experience, even though it wasn't actually following like the story cues for how you should be feeling about this character.
Oh, that is so cool. And it's so, I think that's really great that the music, you know, can be so influential with what is going on in the game and stirring up all these emotions and stuff. And, you know, I have to say, one of the things I've always loved about Borderlands is that really cool, you know, driving rhythmic, those sort of dancey type things. They make it like really, this is going to sound weird, but they make it fun to shoot stuff.
Yeah, no, you just hit the nail on the head there as to why we use EDM in the series. That was the primary motivation in BL1 of even starting to bring that in. There's also an element in BL1, I guess it was like 2008, 2009. That was when like Deadmau5 blew up and, you know, like, and EDM really was starting to make its way into like country. It hadn't become ubiquitous yet because this is also around the time when like dubstep started. And so that's back when dubstep was fresh. And so us being kind of a small, scrappy indie studio, I also felt that like musically it put us kind of on the leading edge of culture there.
Yeah.
And that's usually how I work. I try to find multiple kind of like, God, I hate the word synergy, but multiple synergistic, you know, elements that, you know, basically hitting two birds with one stone. And that the influence of EDM was like that for me. So BL1, we can be in the leading edge. It supports the narrative of our studio as a scrappy studio. It works for the game. We have this irreverent sense of humor. And so when we bring in the EDM flavor, it's just great beats to frag to. and then it brings like a level of energy. And it's a really easy way to just kind of bring that high energy. And it also melds with a stylistic element that I've always done with the series, which is these should sound almost like their songs on an album and almost like their score, but should never feel like just one or the other.
one of the tracks that I really, really loved is your Maliwan Is Here, because it's got all that energy. It's got such a great beat, and it's not like working really hard at it. It's got this kind of easy quality to it that I really, really love. That's such a cool track.
That's awesome. Yeah. And that track is one example of, it's good to highlight. So if you listen to that track, you'll hear that almost every eight bars, it kind of switches up. And the reason for that is that that's actually how it was implemented. That entire track is one 8-bar music segment with, I want to say, I think 65 different WAV files in it. And in the game, it just recombines them on the fly. And so the linear like arrangement you're listening to in game, a bass line from 1 minute in would probably play with a percussion part from 3 minutes in, which would then play with a chord structure like 2.5 minutes in. And then it would just re-randomize again. And so almost everything you're hearing in that track is all stuff that was thrown into one container and like a tossed salad. We basically just keep mixing those components up and taking layers out, putting layers in, running low-pass filters up and down. And so that one, I was really happy. And it's got kind of a cool feel. It still feels like it's related to the ambient track, even though it's very different. The vocals that are in that don't appear in game, but the vocals were something that I did have in there originally that I was like, well, maybe I don't want this to repeat over and over for players. But for the soundtrack, I'll just turn this back on.
Yeah, those vocals are so cool. And how did you even do that?
Oh, yes, yeah. So, I wish I could say there was something fancy, but essentially there was some track I pulled off of a sample, an old sample library, and had like African chanting, or it's like a drum circle type thing. And there just was a quality to the man's voice in it that I was like, oh, that's cool. And so I just snip it out and then pitched it down. And then did like distortion and some other things and really kind of blew it up. So it really fits with the creature design and everything. And so when you start playing and hears, you know, type sound, it's like, oh, that could almost have been a creature, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's why I left it in.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And it's just, it really gets your attention. And I couldn't pin down what it was because of the processing and all of that. So it's just, I don't know. It's just really amazing to listen to. So,
oh, thank you. Yeah. I really had a lot of fun with that track.
I bet. Well, how did you get to the sound that you thought was going to be great for the tracks that and the cues and stuff that you contributed? And especially, I'm really curious about Arrival, because the thing that really struck me about that one is how distorted it sounds. That's such a cool thing.
Yeah, so there was lots and lots of distortion on that one. And, you know, and there's distortion on the violin that plays. There's distortion on all the synths. But one of the things I really was trying to go for with the sound of that planet is, you know, I wanted that really warm kind of tape-like rounded or roundness to it. And I use a lot of the pitch warbling and kind of the pitch wandering like it's an old synth to help emphasize the alienness of the planet.
Thank you.
But like so much music in Borderlands, like it also needed to be really beautiful music. Even though the planet is the birthplace of the Vault Monsters, what I wanted to focus on was telling a story of arriving to an alien planet that is asleep and that you feel almost like you're not supposed to be there. But you are there and you're kind of getting this little glimpse of something you're not supposed to.
Thank you.
And so I wanted some of the music to be heavy. I wanted it to be a little bit intimidating and unsettling. But there's also a lot of parts of the ambient music that starts to feel almost like it's a lullaby. And so those were all kind of the thoughts running through my head when I was doing the ambient exploration music. And then with Malawan Is Here, I was like, okay, now how do I marry that up with, you know, these pedaling, you know, synth basses and get that high energy? And how do I still make it sound alien? And I've always been a huge fan of chamber orchestras and just their sound, because Shadow of the Colossus is probably still my all-time favorite game and one of my all-time favorite soundtracks. And that whole soundtrack was essentially a chamber orchestra.
Yeah.
And
wow.
So I used a chamber orchestra section of a violin, so basically half a violin section, to do all of those kind of melodic lines. And then, you know, and then I run some, like, a phaser over it, some distortion and other stuff, just to kind of give it a tilt. And that kind of, like, it just has such a, I've always found that the kind of Divisi section has such an intimate feel to it, that if I ran that with kind of these soaring melodies over the other stuff that's going on, it just provided kind of an epicness to it without having to, like, rely on French horns or being, like, big in the epicness. You know, it was more just having those rising lines and that the legato violin was moving smoothly through pitches, just like the bass. And so that's how I tried to work out the sympathetics between those two tracks.
Wow. Yeah, it's very cool. And The Arrival especially reminded me of, oh, you know, those films you'd see in the late 70s and 80s when space was, it was cool to be in space.
Yeah.
And it was mysterious and huge. And so...
Yeah, I've always been a fan of the Spielberg, the aliens aren't to be afraid, you know, aren't here to kill us type sci-fi. I've always been a fan of that. And I definitely did that in this case. I mean, in this case, literally the whole planet actually is trying to kill you. But
yeah. But you don't find that out right away. So you know.
Yeah, exactly. And also we often push narratives and music that maybe don't exist in the game also. So... that's also something I try to do with the music, and I talk about this with other composers as well, is here's like a narrative we can tell with the music, so we have these layers of narrative. And I think that that's where a lot of the kind of the stickiness of just being in the world of Borderlands revolves around a lot of that, because I think that oftentimes the mistake that a lot of games make, at least in my opinion, is that there's actually too much consonance. So what I mean by that is that here's a sad scene, there's the sad music, there's the sad expressions in everyone's face, you know, and everything is very, they line up and they support one another and it's all moving in the same direction. I mean, my approach to the psychology of the music is that we're always, as beings, we're always feeling multiple things at the same time. And oftentimes the kind of romantic themes that we talk about in stories and everything, they invariably involve those kinds of like dualities of emotions of like, I'm sad, but I'm also angry and I'm also this. Like the emotions that people talk about or the experiences that people talk about are always, there's always multiple aspects and facets to it. And that's what makes it interesting. And so that's what I try to do with the music is, you know, that's why we'll have really pretty music, even though there's bandits screaming and then all... on its face, it doesn't look like they go together. But once you're experiencing it in a game, you have these multiple emotions kind of pulling at you. And so it's not that it feels like real life, but it at least tracks a little bit closer to what I think emotional experience actually is. So I don't know. I got a little heady there, but, you know, we also have 5,000 poop jokes. So.
But yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I've always appreciated about the games is the humor. And it, you know, it's there in the writing, it's there in the characters and the action and stuff. And I think it's been a really great choice all along to not make the music, you know, kind of wacky too, because then you'd be kind of competing with the humor rather than just, you know, kind of supporting it.
Two on the nose is a phrase I utter a lot around here. But we've also had that, like, you know, one of the ways we talk about Borderlands is, you know, Borderlands is funny, but it's not a joke. I don't know, reviewers might disagree with some of that with Borderlands 3. but which I find really funny, actually. I think I take a perverse pleasure in negative reviews. Another thing that we've talked about Borderlands in the past is as far as like a creative imperatives go, is we are almost selling characters more than we're selling a game. And as when we keep that kind of focus in our mind, Borderlands, that's when Borderlands is really succeeding. It's really that character oriented. And so that's partly why I feel perfectly safe divorcing the narrative of the music from the story at times, when I feel like it's actually serving to be a better experience for people. Because it's not that the story is bad in those moments. It just happens to be that there's another story that we could superimpose over it that would make the whole thing feel more interesting. I could talk more about that, but I've already waxed. Quite a bit.
It's got to be tough because not only is the music, you know, an integral part to the story and you know, exploring and stuff, but you kind of don't want to get ahead of the story either, I would think, and have the music sort of tip the hand of what's going to happen next. So you've got to, I don't know, it must be a really tricky balancing act.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something that, like I said, I've learned to really embrace risk-taking, and it almost always pays off. Well, we did a little more, Jesper and I worked a little bit more on like subverting expectations in Eden 6, because as you progress to the last level of Eden 6, the music, instead of getting more somber or more epic, actually goes more gamey. And this is what I like, this is kind of what I've said, that boss track I was talking about earlier is a boss track that happens in that level. And it works wonderfully because it harkens back to like older game music, and then it just really highlights the fact that you're having fun with Borderlands, and that Borderlands is about fun. It's like we have our moments of drama in there, but it's really about the fun, and so it still works because we're still kind of playing to the larger, you know, meta narrative of the series. And there aren't a lot of games I play that probably could do that also, because Borderlands is something that I never want a Borderlands game to sound like a previous Borderlands game. When new composers come on, you know, I don't want them to sound like a previous composer in the title. And so that's why the music always sounds different between them.
No, that's really cool. And I just, there are so many different like little moments we could talk about, but your track, The Family Wants the Machine, is also super interesting because of how rapidly it changes and it evolves. And is that another time where you kind of let the engine choose things, or?
Yeah. That's kind of like it's a piece that was written for interactivity, and no matter how you try to lay it out linearly, like that structure is apparent in it. And that's like all the composers and I, we all kind of talked about that once we started doing a soundtrack arrangements, because none of the music in the game, except for some of the boss cues, could actually just go straight to a soundtrack because of the nature that it was like the writing had to be done in such a manner that like all those things can recombine. And so when it came time to actually do the soundtrack version, I had to actually write a bunch of additional material just to stitch things together, because in the game you have combat. The guy shooting at you is what's telling you should expect a change in the music. Yeah. When it's on the soundtrack, like, it doesn't make any sense if I just started right in on it. Because at first, that's what I thought. I thought it was going to be a simpler process. I was like, well, I'll pull in one of the bass lines, and we'll filter that open, and then 8 bars in, I'll just add this. And I started doing that, and it quickly was like, that sounds terrible. So there's also a lot of parts in that one that don't actually exist in-game. We'll be right back. the nice thing with the soundtrack is that we all were able to write little bits of material that actually don't exist in the game. So there's aspects of the soundtrack that are unique to the soundtrack. But it also allowed me to take some ideas that I would be more too repetitive in game that I kind of stripped out, and then I could they can be resurrected back to life in the soundtrack. And so that track has some of the heaviest modifications like that.
Yeah, well, it's just it's so cool, and I think it's really cool that listening to a soundtrack more and more is a different experience than hearing the music in the game. Because especially with this one, there's extra stuff and things that you wouldn't have heard, and just corralling all of those tracks into the soundtrack. Yeah, it must have been just an incredible undertaking.
Yeah. It was something getting it to work in game in such a way that it just all felt good, and we weren't having a bunch of randomizations that felt like garbage, you know, because that's the problem. As soon as you just have the raw probabilities driving things, well, the probabilities don't have any sense of taste. So so that was always kind of a risk. And because one of my favorite tracks that Finishing Move did was called Conrad's Hold. And it was, funny enough, it was the first track they wrote for the game as well. And that was one of those pieces where, you know, listening to it outside of the game, and I'm like, oh, will this feel too linear? Will this feel too similar? And then I get it in game, and I start to kind of massage the parts and, you know, what interest level will turn on which tracks. And, all, you know, once I'm getting all that data together and then got all the filtering set up as well, all of a sudden that thing just came to life. And it's one of my favorite levels in the game that I think musically just feels really, really, really tight. And that was kind of the interesting thing. It's like you have to kind of temper what conclusions you're drawing when you're listening to everything outside of the game. One of the things we had along this time around also is that I got the composer's access to a Steam build. So I would get music into the game, update the build, and then the next day I'd be like, hey, the changes are in. You can go check it out. And then they would open the level, start playing the game. And then sometimes they'd be like, oh, you know what? I need to change some parts. And they go back and then they change some parts and they send it back to me. And so the really cool thing about that is that we really all became kind of collaborators. And because I really am not, I don't like having a dynamic of I'm the commander and here's what you guys write. And, you know, I will judge everything. I'm not a fan of that. I don't think that kind of approach works very well, at least for Borderlands.
Yeah.
it does, you know, it doesn't invalidate that approach in other titles, because you have something very cinematic, like you have a different world and a different rule set you're working with. But for Borderlands, at least, that's something that I also had to kind of learn, and that all the composers just had that level of freedom that they could sit there and be like, because I didn't ask them for revisions. They were just like, oh, you know what? Actually, oh, okay, I could do some things in the session that would make this really cool. And that's just how everyone rolled.
That's very cool, because I'm sure it streamlined things for you. Because, yeah, normally there is a lot of oversight from the music supervisor and a lot of back and forth and stuff. But since they all had, you know, access to their tracks and how it was going to work in the game. And then, yeah, the responsibility and initiative to change things. That's very cool. Were you the sound designer on BL3 too?
Yes, I as far as sound design duties, I was originally like the creature coordinator, and I mostly headed up creature sound design, which is sort of a subspecialty, I guess. It's just how I usually end up being the creature guy. I also did almost all of the UI sound design, and I did a bunch of other things here and there, bosses sound design. So while I'm implementing music and directing music, like I'm also, you know, doing all my sound design sessions, going out and recording, taking trips to junkyards. And then I have to go jump into, you know, a voice session for the Psycho, and then I'll write dialogue for the Psycho at night. And so I guess my title is music supervisor for whatever amount of weight we put on that here. Gearbox is kind of a strange place that way.
Well, what I would think would be really helpful about that is that you know what you're doing with the sound, you can make it really integrate nicely with the music, or vice versa, so that there's nothing overlapping or something that sounds really odd, like, you know, with the way the guns are tuned, with their way they shoot, and then with the music and stuff. So being on the inside like that must be really helpful.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's a home field advantage I have that I can't imagine. Well, I mean, I can do my best to try to imagine, but that's the challenge for all these guys like Jesper, Finishing Move, and McCann is that they have to just conceptualize the system. They don't get to be directly hands-on with it. Now, to a degree, they can offload some of that to me, because they're not actually having to put the music in the game, but you need to know how the system works in order to understand what you're going to write. And so that was a big, big, big challenge for everyone on the project. Because with all the layers of things moving and recombining, it was very hard to predict exactly how the writing would pan out. And I thought we'd have more problems than we actually ended up having with that. I mean, it was difficult, but they thought their way through it. But what it just meant is that, like, scoring a level turned into like a 4 to 6 week process. So every level in the game took about 4 to 6 weeks to score. And there's a couple we rushed in three that we got done, but that wasn't a very pleasant exercise. So we tried to avoid it.
Yeah. Wow, we've covered a lot here, but is there anything that I missed that you want people to know about the music?
Man, I would say just listening to how each composer kind of voiced their planets is something they can enjoy, and feeling out how, when you're walking around, if you're walking around and you're not doing story stuff and you're just exploring, you'll hear the kind of the ambient music kind of go in and out of various phases and everything. And yeah, I guess what I'll just wrap up with is that our soundtrack is definitely the biggest Borderlands soundtrack we've ever done. I think the running time is almost 6 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, almost 6 hours. Each composer wrote about an hour and 45 minutes of material, and that's after taking out stuff that was filler for like the game space. And so we're 15 minutes shy of 6 hours, and we're hoping that the soundtrack will be coming out sometime soon. We're in the process of working at that. We should have more information soon, and we'll have more information about things like vinyl as well. But I'm really, really excited. Right now, the best place to find music are just preview tracks that each composer is releasing via their Twitter or their SoundCloud or YouTube. And for now, until the soundtrack drops, we'll be continuing to kind of dole those out.
That's so cool. And I just, as soon as you mentioned vinyl, I had this vision of like a corrugated metal rusty cover. That would be so cool.
I did see the artwork for it, and it looks super cool. Like,
that's so awesome. Boy, Raisin, I have had so much fun talking with you. Thank you so much for taking some time and breaking down the music.
Yeah, thank you. That was totally my pleasure, Kate. It was really wonderful talking to you.